I have enough disk space to record 11 hours and 39 minutes.
Well, let's get started. We'll just wrap this whole bad boy up, huh?
Yep.
Okay, so werewolves, and we did that, and that took 5 hours. And now we're back in fire, and just do it, I think.
Yeah.
You just do it.
We solved the curses, and now we're going to go retire while just completely wrecking local economies wherever we go.
Perfect.
Give more kids horses.
Previously on Bad Heroes, Pax has parted a veil of vines to reveal the werewolf village.
New wolves! New wolves! New wolves! New wolves! New wolves!
Sorry, kiddo. Just travelers, not family. Travelers smell bad.
Furia sniffs. I agree.
Oh, now your sniffer works?
You really should meet with the Alpha now that you're here.
Who is the Alpha?
The Alpha's Ning. She's the oldest one here.
There is a small, grizzled-looking woman with white hair who sits beside a lit fire.
Get comfortable, dear. We have a lot to talk about. They say they might have a cure for lycanthropy.
Ning surveys you for a long time and then says,
"Is that the only reason you were sent here?"
No.
Damn it.
We're all telling the truth now. Why else are you here?
We've been contracted by an authority. We are tasked with finding someone who has been afflicted and bringing them back with us.
And where exactly is this cure research taking place?
Be for the queen.
I can't just allow you to take someone from my camp to be used for God knows what by the queen of this cursed nation.
What if we discover who was responsible for causing Iris to startle?
Someone was responsible?
Right before Iris lost her composure, there was movement in the forest behind the rest of the pack.
Let me think on this, and you think too. Why don't we all get a good night's sleep? You will be safe here.
As you crawl into your hammock for the night, Riva, you see that a small portal is opening beside you.
Shit.
A letter falls out, and it says, "Welcome back to the mortal plane, little Riva. Your debt is severely past due, with interest. Please make your next payment accordingly, or don't. Your funeral." And it's signed, Blink.
Riva drops the letter into the fire and watches it burn into ashes.
So you guys spent the night in camp, and movement at camp starts at sunup. You see people tending to an expansive vegetable garden, people cooking over a few pots at the center of camp, and kids absolutely screaming as they chase one another around. In fact, if you wanted to sleep in, I don't think you could, because it is so, so very loud.
Tonmir would be up with the sun anyway. He's within eyesight and is just perched in a tree, nomming on a fruit of some kind for his breakfast.
Yeah, I think this is a normal time for Iria to wake up as well.
Riva didn't sleep super well after the incident with the letter. She went back to the hammock and kind of tossed and turned. And then with like the rising of the sun and activity in the camp, she wandered around a little and is currently just sitting on the ground outside of Pax's house with her back to the wall and is sharpening one of her daggers.
Gideon's probably just sitting. Where was she?
She was meditating like kind of near the fire, like between the group and Pax's house and the fire.
Okay. So she's probably just sitting in the exact same place and using one hand to hold up the forest guide book, thumbing through it while just munching on some of the berries and nuts that were in her rations.
Okay. So as you guys are all like munching on your own thing, Pax actually like is balancing 4 plates on their arms and they come over and they're like,
takes 2 plates.
Okay, yeah, good. Gideon, food?
She'll look up and kind of like craning her neck a little bit because the plate is in Pax's arms and just go, "What is it?"
Well, it's bread and vegetables and some eggs. And I don't know if elves eat meat. The pack doesn't eat meat. It's too close to a mistake, if that makes sense. You know, many of us have been one wrong move away from eating people. I've been told that speech is very off-putting, but it's all vegetables and stuff. Do you want a biscuit?
She stares, not really any kind of emotion on her face, just staring at them and blinking, and then slowly reaches out her hand to take one of the plates.
Like out of pity.
Boy, that was awkward. All right, here you go. Let me try that again. Tonrear, you want some biscuits?
It's just biscuits now.
It's biscuits and vegetables, and there's nothing, no weird backstory about that. Everything's fine. I've never eaten anyone, ever. Here you go.
Neither have I. And he jumps down. And he jumps down from his perch and comes and grabs a plate and just gives a nod of thanks.
Pax looks visibly very nervous.
Iria offers a plate to Reva.
Reva seems like a million miles away, but then when Iria sticks the plate in front of her face and I guess like waves it around a little, she like blinks back into focus and is like, oh, thanks, and takes it from her.
So there's a couple things that you guys probably notice in daylight that you couldn't see at night. One is this like really expansive garden. Another thing that you notice that you may not have noticed the night before is three small square structures with heavy blankets tossed over them. And out of the corner beneath one of the blankets, you can actually see what looks like metal bars. It's the first metal you've seen here at camp. It kind of almost looks like a freestanding jail cell. And in addition to that, you just see the garden and lots of people running around. And I think some kids like are tussling. I think one of them is Pax's kid is like tussling another kid and like rolls around at your feet, Reva and Iria, and then just scampers off.
Iria smiles at them.
Tonmere will quirk an eyebrow at the blanket tossed cages. As the food is finished being handed out, Tonmere will look over and say, nods towards the cages and says, so, trappings?
Pax has like half a biscuit in their mouth and goes, trappings? Oh, those.
Yeah, he nods over toward the blankets.
Yeah, so those are, when you're a werewolf, sometimes calming down is hard. And sometimes you have to go to the calm down room and hang out in the calm down room in the dark so that you don't do a bad thing.
This is their no-no square.
Yep. So that's what that is. I know that sounds a little weird, maybe a little kinky. It's just...
Pax, you're so awkward.
I know. You got to understand. I never talk to strangers, like, ever. Ever. There's no strangers. I know everybody here.
Pax, is anyone in those cages right now?
Yeah. There's one person in there right now.
Is it Iris?
No, I still don't know where Iris is.
Is that where I would have gone if I had turned?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there only one calm down cage?
There are three calm down cages over here. There's some more calm down cages that are like secluded in the woods for people who like want some more privacy. Everybody kind of like deals with their stuff differently, and some people like to be together when they're dealing with their stuff, and like some people like to be in the middle of nowhere where nobody can hear them screaming. And that's totally fair.
Okay.
So we have like 8 calm down cages. I shouldn't call it the calm down cage.
Well, the purpose of it is understandable, but yes, the nomenclature could use a little bit of updating.
I mean, I usually call it the calm down room, but...
Is it really a room?
Anyway, as you said, I'm profoundly awkward, so maybe I'll just... And Pax, like, does finger guns and, like, walks backwards.
It's worse. You made it worse.
I know! They finger guns backwards until they're just kind of, like, standing where they can see you, but, like, not in conversational range.
At this point... After probably having heard Tonrier being awake for a little bit and starting to munch on some things, Ruthwein will have made his way back and is probably perching on the nearby house, preening himself.
Okay.
I'll see if I can perceive Reva's fatigued state from not sleeping well. He'll look at Iria to get Iria's attention and then nod over to Reva and just kind of shrug, like, any idea what's going on? Just that silent communication.
Iria looks in Reva's direction and notices that spaced outness, but then looks at Tanrir and just gives like a shrug like,
Reva, did you sleep okay?
Yeah, I slept fine. I slept fine.
Did you?
It's convincing.
You seem very spaced, and I'm just checking to see if everything's okay.
I guess I'm just still tired from yesterday. You know, like, walked through the woods all day, and then fought a werewolf, and then came here, and I guess I'm still just tired. That's all.
Tonmer gives a nod, not clearly convinced, kind of squinting his eyes, but nods nonetheless, and then looks over to Irian and says, "How's the food?"
"It's delicious."
And then, of course, Tonmer looks to Gideon to see how Gideon is likely balancing a book and food between two hands.
Gideon has the book kind of half resting on her knee and is holding the plate and just kind of picking at it.
At that point, Tonmer is probably going to come sit down next to Gideon and just continue eating a little bit and just go, "So, how are you feeling?"
How close did you sit to Gideon?
Let's go with like 3 feet away.
Okay, so then Gideon didn't notice you.
Fair enough.
She just assumes that you're talking to someone else and she continues munching and reading the book.
Tonmer's going to put a single finger on the dirt itself and sprout out a single root to poke the book.
Gideon's going to immediately reach one hand out to steady the book and then look underneath it, kind of annoyed. And then she realizes what it was and she looks up and says, "Oh, when did you get here?"
Tonmer sarcastically looks up toward the sun and then looks down at a shadow on the ground and says, "About 15 seconds ago."
She doesn't really catch the joke and she just goes, "Oh," okay, and looks back at her book. And then suddenly looks up and says, "Oh, wait, I know this. Did you need something?"
"I know this one. It's hello."
"Gideon, this is an interaction. Hold on, I got this.
Let me look at my..."
Let me get my notes.
Tonmer looks at Gideon and says, "Well, I was going to also ask how you were feeling overall, given the turmoil of the evening prior, but actually, yes, I did have something to ask you."
She's just looking at you expectantly.
Tonmer looks again toward the cages and says, "I can't help but notice that the only thing that is metal here are those cages. And while they might just be metal, I was wondering if maybe you could discreetly discern if there are any other enchantments laid upon the metal itself."
Gideon looks over at the cages. How far away are they from?
20 feet.
Okay. And you said there's inhabitants in them currently?
One of them has a person in it. But there's like a big blanket thrown around the side, so you can't see them.
Okay. Is there anybody nearby that would be watching?
Pax is watching you guys, as is their charge right now. What are you going to do?
I'm not going to do anything. Gideon looks at the cage and then looks back to Tonmer and says, "Is this something you're wanting done discreetly?"
Tonmer just nods.
Gideon looks at them again and then looks at Pax and then back to Tonmer and says, "Then I'll need a distraction."
Tonmer nods quietly and gets back up. And as he's munching food, walks over to Pax.
I'm quickly Googling Pathfinder, strongest metal. Best material.
Best enchanted metal for no squares.
Tonmer, so you go over to Pax and Pax says,
"Hey, Biscuit?"
I don't know why I thought you were about to go, "Hey, bitch."
I'm not convinced it would be any more awkward than what.
I thought I'd try sort of a new approach to interaction. Bitch.
It's my new greeting. I'm trying it out. What do you think?
What's up, ass?
And then they do a secret handshake and everything is cool.
Yeah. Plus 20 to charisma. Tonmer will nod and graciously accept the offer. And what he's going to do is stand on the opposite side of Pax. Pax is between Tonmer and the cages just to kind of turn his attention a little bit.
Okay.
And in the background, you see da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
You see Kron from Emperor's New Groove, like,
yep, humming my own theme song. No, she is kind of trying to get up very quietly and like mosey her way on over. quiet like.
Okay, roll stealth.
That was the least stealthy roll.
That sure sounded like a nat one.
No, I was do I even have stealth? Oh, it's 2. I 17 total.
Okay. Yeah, you mosey on over unimpeded, and you've done it. You're there.
Tomer will catch that out of the corner of his eye, and he's going to look at Pax and look at the structure itself, which, if I remember, was kind of grown into a structure, if I'm right.
The structures of the little homes there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like living trees with vines wrapped around them to create the walls.
Okay. Tomer is going to look at Pax and say, what of this land do you not know that you wish to?
What a question.
Wow.
And in the meantime, while Pax is stumped, Gideon's going to do, I guess, a knowledge arcana check.
Go ahead and roll that.
Huh. Okay. 24.
Okay. Well, since we're having a CSI episode about these cells, I'm going to tell you that they're made of steel and they have an enchantment on them that I'm going to go ahead and call Strong Time. And it means that they are extra strong and hard to bend.
Wow.
Bad Heroes and GM, everyone. This is, hey!
Who on earth put me in charge?
I think would be you did.
Yeah.
I am a fool of the highest order. No, what you intuit is that these cages, they are very strong to begin with, and then they are supernaturally strong on top of that. So they are clearly designed so that whoever you lock in there cannot get out, even if they are a giant raging werewolf.
Giant woman.
A giant woman.
Wow.
Yeah, got him.
Don't lock the gems in there, please.
Okay, then Gideon will mosey her way on back to her spot.
You go back and Pax is still going,
well?
So successful.
What is that? And points at a bird. What kind of bird? Can you talk to the bird? I'm not sure exactly where we were going with this.
Well, that is absolutely fine. But I do have the ability to speak with the land, and I didn't know if there was something that maybe in its history that you were curious about.
Can I talk to your owl? Can you talk to your owl? Can I have a conversation with your owl through you? I've always wanted to know what it's like to fly.
Tonrir has a very considerate moment after he hears that, and then looks at Ruthawine and says, this is something that I've never even thought to ask myself. And then he looks back at Pax and asks a little bit more seriously, tell me, have you ever been able to teach others how to shift into forms?
You mean like non-werewolves how to shift, like druidic shift, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So if that's something you're interested in, then I think you need to talk to Ning. My sort of specialty is calming down, you know, sort of the non-violent path. That's sort of my specialty. But Ning is a druid. And Ning can turn into all kinds of stuff.
Perhaps you and I will speak later, because like I had mentioned earlier, I did try to calm down Iris. And if you can teach me some of the things that you know, it would be a useful tool set to have.
Yeah, for sure. And Tonra, you actually see Ning leaving her house, and she is standing beneath some maple trees, and she's humming.
Can you paint a word picture for Ning?
Yeah, for sure. So Ning is a like very small, older, kind of grizzled looking woman with white hair. She walks with a gnarled wooden cane, and her face, she has these two large scars that go from hairline to chin and go over a missing eye. And her remaining eye is golden.
It makes sense that she is at the head of the pack.
She knows more about this forest than the rest of us all put together. She helped found the covenant that has made the sanctuary possible.
And then let's pan over to somebody else. And Iria, you see Solas, that half elf that had the bandolier. You see him working at like a table that is outdoors and has like a little vine overhanging to keep him out of the sun. And he is working with like a series of herbs and like potions. And he looks like he's alchemizing stuff. And you remember that Ning told you that you must speak with him.
Yeah, Iria was going to finish eating her biscuit, and she's kind of panning around the area and sees Solas mixing these different potions together and realizes that that is probably the person that Ning wants her to talk to. So she's going to scrape up the rest of her food, put it in her mouth very quickly, and try to find a place to put her plate. She's kind of looking around like, you know, is there like a trash can with one of those flat tops where she can put her tray down?
There's like a stack of dirty dishes that's by like a water pot and someone's cleaning them.
Okay. She's going to go put her plate down there and then she's going to head over to Solas.
Okay. Yeah. You guys did talk to Solas. Solas was turned into the white wolf. Solas is one of the guardians and had like the bandolier of potions and was trying to like calm Iris and told you about the Quisine mushrooms. What was Solas's voice? I think Solas had like a surfer bro thing going on. So you approach and Solas, who's like a half elf with like long blonde hair, lifts his hands and goes, "Oh, hey, Iria, right? Can I fix you something?
Can I fix you?
Can I fix you?
something. I meant something."
And he says like, "I got tea. I'm sort of the healer / herbalist / expert tea maker / master of the calm down mushrooms."
That's what you guys name everything, isn't it?
That was the best.
They're all about that calming down.
Iria says, "Hey, yeah. Ning mentioned that I should, meet with you. I'm not. She didn't really say why, but she said it might be a." Here's what she said. She said, "I see you talking to Solas, and I don't know what this means, but she seems pretty wise and like she knows what she's talking about."
Yeah, that's very her to like send you over here with no reason. So I guess tell me about yourself.
Well, I'm purple.
Unless you are, and I like that. Unless you hate telling me about yourself, and then I'll just tell you about tea.
Is there any tea that you're drinking right now?
I'm making one. And then he like pauses for a second and he's like, "Well, that's super weird. Some of my stuff is missing."
Oh no. What stuff?
Like some reagents and like some of my glasses. I probably just left them somewhere. That's okay. I'm sure it'll turn up. So he's cutting this root into like painstakingly small pieces and mixing it with half a dozen other like finely cut flowers and roots and then scooping that mixture into like really small tea bags. And he goes, "Hang on. I gotta cast a spell. May this humble brew do what I want it to. Bring out the best version of me with the love in this tea." And he finishes up and wipes some sweat from his brow and pours some hot water into a ceramic cup with a bag of the tea. And he says, "You probably don't want to drink this. I can make you something else. How do I describe this? It will put hair on your chest, like literally. It will put hair on your chest, but not in a cat way. I see you already have that. Simplest way to explain this is that I used to be seen as a woman, but this is my special tea that I make.
Specialty tea.
This is my tea."
Wait, so this tea helped you to not be seen as a woman?
Yeah, yeah. What it does is it deepens my voice. And it gives me other characteristics that people tend to perceive as masculine. I started making it after I came here with Ning's help. She kind of invented it. And I'll never stop. As long as I keep drinking it, I will look and feel like myself.
Wait, that's possible?
Yeah.
What?
So you want like a oolong or like a...
No, I want that. I didn't know that was a thing that could happen.
Oh my God, you want this?
Yeah, I definitely want my voice to be much deeper than it is now.
Holy shit, really? Really? Oh my God. I'm sorry. I'm so excited. Really?
Yeah.
And he's like, he's like pouring you a tea and he like shoves it in your hands, but like a little too enthusiastically. And some of the water like spills and he's like, "I'm sorry. I'm just really excited. I've never met anybody else who feels this way." Really?
Yeah. I had no idea this was a thing that could happen. I have always, you know, kind of knew that I was a little different and I never related to any of my like my mom or my sister kin, but I mean where I'm from, you know, that that isn't super important. What's important is like what the pride needs and what we can do for each other. But if I knew this was a thing, I would have done this long ago.
He's like actively stuffing tea bags into your pockets. Like every available pocket is now full of tea bags. And he's like, holy shit, like, please help yourself. What's mine is yours. And he's just like, he's just handing you all of the tea. And he's like, is that enough? Do you think?
Wait, so
like dry tea bags are like pouring out of your pockets.
So how do I dry? I just drink this with hot water?
Yeah, you just drink it with hot water. I did the spell. It's kind of like a slow process. It doesn't happen right away. But you just like, you drink it and then you think about what you want and you just really like manifest that super hard and then it will happen.
Okay, how often do I have to drink it though and think about this?
Like at least every week.
Okay, I can totally do that.
Yeah.
Wow, this is exciting. I had no idea this is something that could happen.
He is like wicked excited and he's now put an arm around you and is like swaying with you actively. Like very, very excited.
So he shoved a cup in her hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think Iria is going to like start drinking that and like being really happy about it and thinking about all the things that she has thought about, you know, wanting to be different about her.
And in fantasy land, the greatest gift that I've given you is that you don't have to get stabbed every week.
That is pretty great.
A gift I cannot give you in real life. So, Gideon, you're sitting reading, right?
Yeah, Gideon returned back to her spot after doing the whole check-in on the cage and is just back to reading and munching.
Okay, so Pax's kid, that like small child who's blonde and big blue eyes, just like creeps up behind you and taps you on the shoulder.
Having been interrupted for the second time today, this morning, Gideon's going to kind of, in a very minutely annoyed fashion, close her book and then swivel, because she's sitting down kind of cross-legged, and swivel a little bit to look at who tapped her on the shoulder.
You find that tiny kid. You find Pax's kid. And he says,
hey.
Hi.
So what was dying like?
What?
He kind of just like clamors over you with like no respect for your personal space.
Gideon is very distraught by this. Like her hands are up, like she doesn't know what to do, and she doesn't really necessarily want to like hold this kid. So she's like, ah.
But you are holding this kid. And he says, like, okay, so I'm Auden, and my parents said that you used to be a vampire, and vampires are dead, right? So you've died. So did you go through the light and stuff like people say? Did you ever bite anybody? Can I see your teeth?
And Gideon is just staring at this kid who is now in her lap, like a very blank stare. And then she looks to Pax and Tonrir and then looks around.
And mouths help.
and just looks around trying to see if anybody is going to come and get this kid off of her.
You know those Pixar shots with the kids who are really close to the camera? Just their face is like right there. This is exactly what I'm seeing.
That's what it is. And also he's like slowly reaching to your mouth to try to open your mouth to look at your teeth.
Gideon, what does Gideon see when she looks around to like Pax and everybody? Like what?
Pax gives you a thumbs up.
Are they looking this way?
Yeah, they're watching you and they give you a thumbs up.
Tonry follows Pax's gaze and sees the thumbs up. And then he takes another small bite of that biscuit. He's got a little bit of a smile on his face.
If Pax looks away, then Gideon's going to do a very, like, it's gentle, but she is going to swat Auden's hand from her mouth.
I think you swat his hand and he's totally undeterred. He's like, you are like, you're very pretty and fancy. Are you a queen?
No.
Are you a vampire queen?
I'm not a vampire.
But you were, right? You died, right?
Yes, but if you know that I was one, you know that I'm no longer one.
Okay, bye! And does like a backwards roll and then like vanishes off to like go scuffle with somebody else.
Gideon just trying to logic her way out of this conversation with a child.
I was really anticipating the, but why?
Riva saw all that go down and she's actually laughing for the first time that morning as she gets up and walks over to Gideon. Is Gideon sitting on the ground?
Gideon has stood up to avoid any more children crawling into her lap.
A real risk.
So she walks over to where Gideon is and folds her arms and says, So you like reading, right?
Having now been approached for a third time, Gideon's in the process of like dusting herself off and just turns slightly towards Reva and says, yes, I would say I enjoy reading. Yes. Why?
Do you collect rare books?
I try to. My family has an amazing collection back home, but I am limited to what I can find and what I can hold in this pack.
And Reva seems to be thinking about this. And she says, what would you say if I told you that in my travels, I happened upon a library in sort of a pocket dimension, I guess you could describe it as?
Gideon's eyes are so wide right now. Like she's absolutely fascinated. She's just has completely stopped dusting herself off, is just staring at Reva expectantly.
It just had like shelves full of these really old books that I haven't really seen before.
Gideon is very, very slowly getting closer to Reva.
And Reva, she's like spinning this tale and she looks at Gideon paying rapt attention and she sighs. I can't do this. This just feels wrong. I'm sorry. Never mind.
And Gideon like grabs Reva by the shoulders and says, no, wait, what? What about this library?
Nothing.
How do I get there? Can you take me there?
No, I'm sorry. I don't know. I was trying to do this thing that I usually do where I have this problem from my past. And in order to solve that problem, I just kind of create a different problem in the future. But then I can worry about that problem later because it'll fix the first problem. Do you know what I mean?
And Gideon's eyes kind of narrow as she realizes her chance at this mystical, wonderful library is no more. And she kind of narrows her eyes and continues brushing herself off in a more irritated fashion and picking up her stuff and says, yes, Reva, I do know what you mean. I've been mocked for my love of literature before. And then she gathers her stuff and walks away.
Womp, womp. And Reva just sort of like stands there watching Gideon walk away and just sort of huffs and is like, well, that's what you get when you try to do the right thing. And kind of like kicks out a pebble.
And they say that you can still hear the whisper of Reva's ghost in that forest after Gideon killed her for taking her for a ride. All right. Tanru, you see Ning standing beneath the trees humming.
Humming?
Humming.
Humming.
As if she's humming to the trees.
What does it sound like?
I wouldn't say it's particularly melodic, but it is happy humming.
Okay, so Tonmir is going to bid his departure from Pax and will similarly go set the plate down by the wash bin and will call Ruth Owen to perch on his shoulder as he walks over to Ning. And as he hears that humming, wanted to see if he can perceive anything happening to the tree that she's humming to.
You see the leaves of the maple tree, the like great sort of like orange maple tree that she's standing at the foot of. You see the leaves shudder, even though there isn't any wind.
Okay. And judging by the surrounding trees, is it probably the oldest tree in the area?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Tonmere is walking up, and what he's going to do is approach on her left at a distance, so that way she can easily see from her peripheral that he's approaching. And he's walking with his hands clasped behind his back, and he's observing and hearing the humming and is looking up toward the maple. And he says, this is a wonderful tree.
It is, isn't it?
Do you hear them?
Well, I hear something.
That tree sounds really weird.
Wow.
Wow, is this tree
that tree is so right? fast.
Ooh. The shutter is the result of a catalytic converter. It turns out.
Tree go brr.
Hey, this is Dre Silvertooth, and thank you for listening to episode 33 of Bad Heroes, part 8 of the Wild Hunt arc. Boy, we've been in Socelia and Sanguine Silvas for a while, huh? It is so different from the last arc, but I am really enjoying it, and I hope you are too. An important thing that I want to note this episode, there is a major content warning for the end. So, if there's anything you feel strongly about, or if you just want to be safe, please go to badheroes.com/content warnings. That way you can decide if you want to listen and be prepared when you do. As with all things, we do our best to handle it with care. All right, on to lighter things. Hey, do you like sci-fi? If so, then may I recommend Apollyon, an awesome new sci-fi audio drama that I am in. Our pilot episode is already out and is available on whatever podcast app you use. Just search Apollyon, A-P-O-L-L-Y-O-N. I play an AI, so check it out to hear me being a robot. And hey, if you like what you hear, if you want to hear the rest of the story, please consider donating to our crowdfunding campaign to support production of the rest of the season. You can support Apollyon at ifundwomen.com/projects/Apollyon. Now, I have a very cool promo to share with you from another great podcast. Here we go.
Saval's Guild of Adventurers. Many come to train here. Few have the dedication necessary to enter the life of an adventurer.
Cities under attack. Lost artifacts uncovered.
A king's missing daughter.
Evil brewing in the forest.
Trouble lurks around many corners. Each for their own reasons, these four individuals have sought out this lifestyle. Follow their stories in the Aurelian epic as they
confront their nightmares,
decipher their visions,
explore new realms,
and make the world a better place.
These are
The Adventures in Aurelia.
Listen to this story at adventuresinaurelia.com. That's E-R-Y-L-I-A.
That was Adventures in Aurelia. You can find them on Twitter at AureliaPod. That's E-R-Y-L-I-A pod. Music in this episode is Lost Frontier by Kevin MacLeod and Immersive by Sergei Chiromisinov. Our theme is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane. We also use a magic sound effect by Olver at freesound.org and some hang drum music by our resident bard Rev Winter. You can find us on social media at Bad Heroes Cast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and email us at badheroescast@gmail.com. You can support us in our collaborative storytelling by becoming a patron at patreon.com/badheroes. Or you can help us for free by introducing our show to a friend or leaving us a review on Apple or Podchaser. Last but not least, we want to thank Roll20 for sponsoring us and for sharing our show with their wonderful community. If you sign up for a Roll20 Pro subscription at roll20.net, you can get free goodies for your virtual tabletop every month. This month's featured reward is a very fun board game called Monstrosity. Not Monstrosity, Monstrosity. So go check it out. I think that's it. The next episode should be out on May 28th. See you then. We'll be right back.
All right, ready?
Ready.
Do you hear them? They are happy to see you.
Tonra will take a look toward the trees and listen to see if he can perceive what she does.
Roll, what would that even be? I guess a nature check, right?
Yeah. It's going to be good. 29.
You can't hear them, but I think she reaches out and, if you allow her, takes your hand with her gnarled hand and pushes it against the base of the tree. Mm-hmm. And when you touch the tree, you do feel this sense of warmth.
Tonra's head cocks a little bit to the left as he is looking at where his hand is being placed. And he closes his eyes for a moment to absorb that feeling and try to memorize it. And he opens his eyes and he looks back to Ning and nods. He says, I feel that. What is it?
It is the tree. Nothing more and nothing less. So, tell me, Tonmir Seni, where are you in your druidic training?
I think what he will do is start demonstrating some of the nature craft that he does know. Is there perhaps, with a garden nearby, a plot of land that's yet untouched?
Yeah, there's probably like a big garden and they're probably cycling through areas. So there's like a part that's recovering. So there's probably like an empty plot.
Okay. If there's a plot that's recovering, he's going to nod to Ning and walk over to it. And he will kneel down to it and have his hands upward initially. And there's this ebbing green warmth that comes from them, and he slowly pushes that down into the ground to start helping re-energize the soil and make it a good nutrient base for anything that's going to be planted. And as that happens, some small leaves start coming out of it, and he's going to try something fancy, which is tree weaving, which is basically taking two like very small saplings and weaving them together so that way they grow up in that pattern. He's going to try to do it without touching them, but it's pretty tough.
Oh, okay. Cool. Give me a nature check.
That one's not going to be as good. 3 plus 11, so 14.
Okay. I think you feel the soil getting the nutrients from you. You feel that working. But when it comes time to grow these saplings in sort of perfect harmony with each other, you falter. Like, I think you try to picture this feeling of two creatures in perfect harmony, trusting one another, supporting one another, holding each other up as they grow and change, and you can't feel it. And as you try to feel that feeling of connection and like togetherness and trust that these trees must feel to be wound around one another, you are unable to, and they end up splitting off and growing separate.
Tonrir sighs out a small amount of frustration, but understandable frustration, as he's not as practiced. And he stands back up and looks over toward Ning and says, I worked on cultivating the land. I was learning how to shape wood when I left my last home. I can communicate a bit with the animals, talk with the winged insects and the small spiders that may roam between the trees, and I can even speak with the land itself. But in all of these ways, well, I'm still a sapling.
It takes time. Don't worry. It will come. And she reaches up pretty far and pats you on the shoulder and says, so, what about shifting?
It's something that I've only thought about, but I haven't really considered, and it's interesting. He looks back over towards Pax and says, I was chatting with them earlier, and they asked what it was like to fly. And I realized that even I had not taken that question into consideration. If I'm to fulfill what I need to do with the land and to protect it, it is not going to be enough for me to simply mend it and grow it on 2 feet. In some instances, I know I will need to travel faster, and so I know that it will be necessary to be that which roams the forest.
Well, I can give some advice if you'll indulge an old woman.
Of course.
She leans on her gnarled cane and begins to walk and is doing sort of a circle around the camp if you come with her.
Mm-hmm.
And as you walk, she says, "Those of us who shift merely express other sides of our true nature. We are not playing pretend, nor are we imitating something outside of ourselves. When you shift, Tanrir, you are not becoming something else. You are expressing another facet of yourself that has existed all along."
"So that which is within comes out."
"Another pitfall. How do I describe it? Are you familiar with the concept of naturalistic fallacy? It is the belief that things which occur in nature are intrinsically good." "For a druid, that sounds good, doesn't it? But there is a problem with this mindset. The problem, of course, is that it is quite one thing to respect the natural balance, but quite another to revere nature itself as infallible. You are free to disagree, of course, but it is my experience that to be one with nature, to be one with the shift, you must understand that the natural world is neither above nor below you. The humanity within you is neither better nor worse than the heart of an old oak or a young fox kit. You are just another creature, struggling as all creatures have before you to survive. And hopefully, to survive as kindly as you can."
Tanrir nods at that and looks down in some considerable thought and says, "I see what you mean. We are all but a part of the cycle."
"Exactly."
"Well, if it is something that you are willing to teach me, I have been without a teacher for some time, and already I can tell that there is something that I would need greatly from you. I don't know what quite that is yet, or if it's just with shifting, but our roots, I believe, will intertwine."
She gives you a really warm smile and claps you on the shoulder.
While Tanrir was talking with Ning, I think Iria like still hangs out with Solas, just is asking him a bunch of questions about the tea and what'll happen and what should she expect timeline-wise, and just getting really excited about that. But then that conversation kind of peters out and she's thinking about the mission and where they're at, the village. So Iria will say, "So Solas, how long have you been here?"
"Me? Like, not that long, actually. Like 5 years."
"Cool. Where were you before?"
And he kind of looks like sad for the first time. And he's like, "I was with my family, in Koldon. So what you'll learn about most of us here is that becoming a werewolf is not a chill thing at all." "And it was not a consensual thing, and I didn't want that to happen. And between my home and here, a lot of bad things happened. And that's a very common story for people here, is like, I had a home, I got bit, it sucked, people died, people kept dying, I almost died, there was a lot of death and blood and stuff, and I was lost and confused and frightened, and then I found my way here. But I'm from Koldon. My family's had a shop where we sold trinkets and bread and cider and stuff like that."
"Man, I'm really sorry. That sounds pretty rough."
"It's okay. It's okay. And you're from where?"
I'm from an island south of here. My whole pride, we live there in the jungle. Yeah, so that's where I'm from."
At some point during this conversation, Riva, realizing that she's been sort of left alone in the middle of camp, has wandered over to where Solas and Iria are chit-chatting.
"Oh, hey, Riva? Riva of the tree? Hiding in the tree?"
"Riva of the tree."
"Riva of the tree?
Yep, that's me. Don't mind me. Don't let me interrupt what you got going on here. I'm just hanging out." "Yep." "And are you guys like sitting around?"
Yeah, I'd say they've sat down and they're kind of hanging out in the shade with their cups of tea.
Yeah, she just sits down with her back to a tree trunk.
I think Iria is going to say, "Yeah,
I imagine a lot of people will have a story like that and how they got here. You live pretty close to a village. Has anything happened with the people at the village? How long has the pact been in place?
The pact with Socelia?
Yeah.
Ning was part of it being made. So I think that was like almost 100 years now, like 90 something years that we've had that pact. I mean, it's with Socelia as a whole, but there's sort of like somebody responsible for upholding it here and then somebody responsible for upholding it in Socelia. And the time that I've been here, it's been Ephra in Socelia who's kind of in charge of it. But yeah, I mean, it works out pretty good for everybody. You know, we have a haven here and they don't bother us. They don't tell people we're here, which is a big one. and we don't do anything, you know, that would be considered violent or bad. It's like definitely a hard won trust that took a really long time to develop, but it's good.
Cool. Reva, what have you been doing today?
Oh, you know, nothing. And she's like clearly uncomfortable and she changes the subject and says, Solas, right?
Yeah.
I remember yesterday when we were walking here, you were talking about these mushrooms, right?
Yeah. Quicine mushrooms.
Yeah. Yeah. And like how you use them to calm down and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know how like Gideon was asking if there's like the opposite of that.
Yeah, that's a very alarming thought. But yes, I remember that conversation because it haunts me now. But yes, I remember that. Yep. What about my nightmares?
You said that there was like some alchemy thing that could like reverse the properties of this mushroom. Like, how does that work exactly?
Yeah, so I don't know how to do that. I'm kind of like, if there's like levels of alchemy, I'm at like level 2, which is like, I made a tea, I took a mushroom and it intrinsically makes you tired and I put it in a tea. That's like sort of my level of alchemy. But I think a principle of alchemy is that you can like take the property of a thing and like switch that property if you're really good at alchemy. But I do not know how to do that. But theoretically, I think it can be done.
But it's like hard to do, right?
Oh, yeah. That would be like super duper hard to do.
Reva kind of just gives Iria a look like she's kind of out of her depth. Like if this was supposed to be an investigation, she doesn't know what to do next.
Iria kind of goes off of that and says, so Ning would be maybe the person who could do that here? Or is there anyone who has that? You know, who's close to having that kind of ability to do that?
Well, Ning is a druid, so not really much with the alchemy.
Okay.
Ning is like a powerful druid caster, but alchemy is like kind of a different thing. Mm. Far as I know, I'm the only alchemist here. There is an alchemist in Socelia, Nettle. She's a lot more advanced than I am.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. She's been doing it longer and we swap recipes and
do you have a pretty good relationship with Nettle?
Yeah, Nettle's super cool. I like Nettle.
Who's close to Nettle? Like, does she have any like family, friends?
Nettle and Ingrid hang out a lot, as far as I know. You probably didn't meet Ingrid because Ingrid is not like a friendly person. Covered from head to toe at all times. That's Ingrid.
Oh, I think we've seen Ingrid around.
Yeah, Ingrid and Nettle like to hang out.
Do you like Ingrid?
Ingrid makes me kind of uncomfortable. She has sort of a smell about her, and that smell is blood. And as somebody who has done some stuff in my life with blood on accident because of the werewolf angriedness, I don't like that very much. So I don't really know Ingrid, because when she comes near me, I run away.
Why would she smell like blood?
Honestly, I don't want to know why Ingrid smells like blood.
I mean, it just sounds like you're asking for trouble if you smell like blood and there's this like knowledge of werewolves nearby.
You know, I kind of have this feeling like Ingrid can like handle her shit. So I don't think Ingrid is scared of us.
personally. That's just my read vis-a-vis Ingrid.
Do you know if anyone's had any like trouble with Ingrid or?
You know, I don't know. I live way over here though, and Ingrid lives way over there though. So I just like know of Ingrid.
Cool.
Yep. Okay, and Tanmir and Ning, I think you guys are sort of completing your lap around and you come near Iria, Riva, and Solas. And Ning says,
well, we clearly have much more to discuss, but given that it's going to be the full moon tonight, I am afraid you all need to clear out. The Guardians have exceptional control over the shift, but the rest of the wolves here may not.
Clear out where?
Stay with Effort tonight in Sosalia, and send my regards. I will come visit soon and we can talk more. I do love Ephra's blueberry cider.
Is there anything from here that we can take that will show that we are friendly to the Pact?
Ah, what a good idea. I will write you a little... Oh, goodbye, foam. Goodbye.
Get back up here.
Ning pulls out a phone to like start writing a text message.
Are you going
to
write us a permission slip?
And she she's going to write you a permission slip. She pulls out like a little piece of parchment like from Solas's desk and scribbles a little note on it. And it says, Dear Ephra, they're chill. Love, Ning.
And there's a little heart.
There's a little heart. She draws some vines around her name. And she hands that over and says, on full moons, we have what I think the kids would call a rager. From dusk until dawn, to help burn off the extra energy. So the guardians will stand around to watch camp and ensure no one comes and goes and subdue anybody who loses control and all of that. It's a whole thing, and you probably shouldn't be here for it. But I know we have a problem to figure out, and I promise I will come meet with you shortly.
Very good. Well, be as it may, perhaps one day I'll be able to witness that rager of a party that you like to have.
Maybe someday. And Ning calls to Pax. And Gideon, what you doing?
Gideon had kind of walked away to go read her book somewhere that she wouldn't be disturbed. And she's kind of like, now she's more irritated because she believes that Riva was mocking her.
I just want to like give Gideon a hug. I know she would hate that, but that's how I feel. You're off reading and Pax comes up and says like,
hey, I think we're getting called. Shall we?
This time, Gideon very huffily, like, slaps her book closed.
Okay, well,
and then
yep.
Gets up and just kind of makes a gesture without saying anything of, like, lead the way.
Okay, bad day. Do you want a biscuit?
And you guys just see Pax and Gideon approach, and Pax rubs her hands together and says, okay, I will walk you back to the path into Sosalia, and on the way back, I will track down and scoop up Iris. She is probably just curled up in a tree somewhere coming down from a real bad time. So, shall we?
Let's do it.
Tanmir nods.
Thanks, Solas. Talk to you later.
He throws an extra tea bag at you, just in case.
Just don't become a casual tea.
Damn it.
Oh, gosh.
It's been a few episodes. I needed to get one in.
A dad joke in. Good.
Riva gets up and waves goodbye to Solas and Ning and looks Iria up and down at just like the tea packets spilling, like poking out of every available pocket. And is like, what's with the tea?
I'll tell you all on the way. I think I have something to tell you all.
Nice. All right. You guys all heading out?
Yeah.
Okay. Your walk back to the trail is pretty uneventful, except for the conversation that Iria is about to have, but it is long. You pass the same grove of Quisine mushrooms, which are more inconspicuous during the day without that ethereal glow, and then you take a long roundabout path to circumvent the river west of where you'd set up camp. It is a pretty peaceful walk for those of you that like such time in nature, and super exhausting for those of you that don't like time in nature.
I think Iria looks at Riva and pulls out a bunch of tea bags and is trying to figure out like where to put all these tea bags. I think she'll pull out like a pouch if she has it. She'll find something where she can put all this in and then put it neatly into her pack. And she'll kind of catch up with everyone and say, guys, I think I have something to tell you.
Tonrir arches an eyebrow and looks over his shoulder while he's walking forward.
I think I'm not who everyone has thought that I am. Like, I...
Oh my God, you're a pirate.
Yes,
I knew it. How did you know? I knew it.
It's all the tea, isn't it? Now, Ariel will say, I don't know. I met Solas today, and he told me that he used to be known as a woman. Like, everyone knew him as a woman before. And I mean, if you've seen him and you've heard him, you know, he doesn't look like a woman, and he's not a woman. And I never thought that could happen. I never realized that was a thing that could happen. But yeah, he was drinking this tea, and he said that this is what has helped him, like, be who he is and be himself. And I think that's what I need. I think that's something that's been missing my whole life. I've always felt a little off, but you know, my family and my pride, everyone's a little off in some way. So it's always been kind of written off as some kind of little quirk. So I never really knew what it was, but you know, it's all making a lot more sense now. I've always felt more inclined to masculine heroes and the stories that my parents would tell. And it just never clicked why that would be. I just thought it was, you know, I was just weird. But yeah, Solas gave me this tea, and he said that it's helped him be who he is. It's helped him present as who he truly is. And I think that's what I want for myself.
Tonrir nods in approval, and he says, it's not something that is off. It's not something that is odd. It's something that is you. And it's natural. Regardless of what your choice is here, I, for one, will support you.
Riva claps Iria on the shoulder, and she just says, that's awesome. I'm happy for you.
Thanks, guys. I'm excited.
Out of question, are you going to keep your name?
Yeah, Iria's kind of on the feminine side. You know, I've always been partial to Ira.
Hmm.
You know, when I was a kid and I would think of myself as a hero in my parents' stories, I was always Ira.
I wanted to do a pun there, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
Well, now I need to hear it.
Being a hero in the stories. Well, that's a bit Ira, Nick.
Oh my God. Blah, blah, blah.
At this point, Gideon, she was looking through her journal. She wasn't writing in it. Once Iria had started talking, she pulled out her journal and started looking through it, and then closes it and puts it back in her bag and says, this changes literally nothing for me. I never referenced you by name.
Oh my God.
I was expecting Gideon to like pull out the book and like start flipping pages and then like furiously just like scribbling the S out of she in any instance that it appears.
No, but I think most of what she would have written was the cat did this.
The cat.
Oh my God. I forgot Pax is there. Oh. I forgot I'm here too. Pax just like comes up behind you and scoops you up and like puts you on their shoulders like it's nothing, like you don't weigh anything, and starts like doing like a very excited march and is like, very exciting, very exciting, very fucking exciting.
Should I say Ira now?
Yeah, if you want to.
Yeah. Ira's like, man, your son must have a lot of fun.
Yeah, he does. So do you want the he, hims now? What's your pronouns?
I like the he, hims.
Cool. All right. Well, I will give him back to you. And Pax lifts you off of their shoulders and sets you down and says, because we are here. And points, and you guys are actually at the tree beneath the zipline near where you made camp the night you met. And Pax gives you guys a salute and says, pleasure meeting you all. The rest is a straight shot. Just follow that path. You can't miss it. I am sorry that I am so awkward. Be well, friends. And then does finger guns and turns around.
My God.
So long, and thanks for the biscuits.
Okay, so you guys start down that path, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
As you guys near Sosalia, you actually see a horse standing on the path with no rider. And wild-eyed, it rears up at your approach and turns to sprint back towards town.
Tonrir is going to try to calm animal.
Okay.
Roll it.
What Tonrir is concerned about is that it's the horse that a certain child bought. And that's why he's wanting to calm him immediately so he can get identification on it, especially since it has no rider.
I got a 13.
I got a 15.
Okay. The horse calms. What do you do?
I'm going to approach it to see if it's the horse that the child was riding on.
It is. It's Ivan's horse.
Guys, something's wrong. Why is the horse out here? It's still, I'm assuming it still has saddle and everything.
Mm-hmm. It's saddled up. It has a bridle, the whole thing.
How far away are we from town?
Maybe a quarter mile.
Tonrir turns to the group with like a sense of urgency in his eyes, having said that, and says, we need to get to town, but we also need to make sure that we're not noticed getting in there. Something's wrong.
Everybody give me a perception check.
26.
16.
22.
16 as well.
Tonrir, Gideon, you see the direction the horse is looking. You see something that looks like a pile of clothes between the trees off the trail.
Tonrir is going to take the bridle of the horse to walk it and approach the clothes to see what's up.
Gideon's going to follow Tonrir.
You two walk a little ways into the woods and you find a small body, sprawled out face down, his hair flickering faintly atop his head. There is blood pooling around him, and it doesn't take you long to see why. Ivan has been bitten by something huge, and unless you do something very quickly, you know that he is going to die.
Tonrir will call the other two over, but immediately looks to Gideon since she's the only one here.
Okay, so he's actively bleeding, right?
Yeah, he seems to be like bleeding out.
Reva comes running and she's like crashing through the bushes.
Gideon is kneeling down and kind of looking at, is he, you said he's lying face down?
He's lying face down, yeah.
And but with the bite marks on the back or?
Bite mark is on his side, his like rib cage and like a little bit of his stomach.
Okay, and Gideon's going to turn and look at Tonrir and say, is this something you could freeze, something to stop the bleeding?
Cloth, get cloth, put it on the wound, quickly.
Can Iria cast Cure Moderate Wounds?
Yeah, for sure.
Iria's...
I forgot we had a freaking bard.
Ira is going to run up and throw down his pack and start getting his drum out to start playing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to like kneel down next to Ivan and play his drum with one hand and touch Ivan near the wound with the other hand. And cast Cure Moderate Wounds, which is when laying your hand upon a living creature, you channel positive energy that cures 2d8 plus 5 points of damage. So
okay, roll that.
So 3, 4, 5 plus 5 is 10.
10 total.
Yep.
Okay. So you're playing your drum with one hand and holding the other hand sort of over Ivan's wounds. And beneath your magic, the wound actually starts stitching itself closed and the bleeding stops. And you can tell that for the time being, he is stabilized. He is still in a bad way and there is still this massive bite mark that you can't do anything about. But for the time being, you see his breathing relax and the flame on top of his head glows a little brighter.
Can I use perception to see if I can see anything from the wound?
Sure.
It's natural 20.
What kind of things are you looking for?
Like teeth marks, claw marks, some kind of identifier.
It looks exactly as you would imagine a werewolf bite would look. It is roughly the size and shape of the mouths of the werewolves that you were fighting.
And then Gideon's going to turn to Tonrir with like a knowing look in her eyes. Looking from the wound and seeing that it's the size of what a werewolf bite would be, and then turn to Tonrir and just look at him.
Can Reva look around to see if they're alone in the woods?
Sure.
Or, sorry, I think Tonrir was going to say something.
Yeah, that was, Tonwer was going to be like, Reva to the trees, get eyes up. And he would also send Ruthwein up to seek, to see if there is something lurking nearby.
Okay. I'm going to climb. Got a 22 on the climb check.
Shoom.
Up the tree.
You scrabble up that tree and go ahead and give me a perception check.
That's only an 11.
Okay. Give me one for Ruthwein.
14.
You see Ruthwein take off, and I think, Reva, you're able to follow his path as he flies through the air, and then you see him dive down over a particular spot and let out a cry. And I think Ruthwein's cry draws everybody's eyes, and what you all hear is a growl. And through the trees beyond, you see a werewolf. You see Iris.
Oh, no.
Blood dripping from her bared teeth.
Oh.
And not an ounce of reason in those gold eyes.